Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a 5-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at Rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at Rinse.com. That's RINSE.com.
Welcome back to a long-expected party. The Rings of Power Lorecast is back in full swing. We are the Lorehounds, your guides to Tolkien's world of Middle-earth. I'm John.
I'm David.
And I'm Marilyn.
And we're here to discuss the new teaser trailer of The Rings of Power Season 2. We did not do an outline for this one, guys.
Right, this is, we're winging this, one.
Off the cuff.
We're just having fun here, folks, so join us.
But we did have quite a lot of prep, actually, for this. We have a whole visual guide to this teaser that we're going to be posting in the show notes of this podcast. So you can check it out. It's on Notion. It'll be for the public. We normally do all our Notion stuff just for our Patreon Supercast subscribers. But this is going to be sort of a sample of our work. There's a picture of each still in the whole teaser. There's a description of the shot for your visually impaired folks. And just to remind you. And there are our individual thoughts on what's going on, as well as the quotes that are within the narration that's in the scenes. So plenty of stuff there. Check that out in the show notes. You can also get early and ad-free access to all our podcasts by subscribing on Supercast or Patreon for as little as $3 a month. And we've also got a Discord server. David, tell me about Discord.
Discord's a great place to chat and connect with others in our community. It's kind of a virtual water cooler space. Think of a forum board, but a little bit more real time, but still has that same kind of vibe to it. And we can post a link to the teaser reaction video or the resource that we have here in the Discord as well. Anyway, we've got channels set up for all the different projects and shows that we're covering. We've got a great moderator team. We actually call them our Dunedain. I always forget the plural
Dunedain.
And the singular. Dunedain. I don't want to get in trouble with my pronunciations.
Dunedain is the plural. Dunedan right. is the singular. All right.
That's what it was. Dunedan right. was the singular.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so they help keep the server organized and running smoothly. And it's a great group of people to come nerd out about all the things that we love, all the pop culture stuff that we love.
It surely is a great group.
Yep. Plenty of great stuff happening over at the Lorehounds. Stick around for the end of the podcast. We'll go over all that. But for now, boy, it's been a while. It's been about a year and a half since the Rings of Power season 1.
Hasn't it been longer?
Mm-hmm. I think it ended October 2022. So right. It's been about a year and a half. It'll be 2 years by the time this airs.
Gosh, it almost feels like longer.
I know. But
I'm having trouble even remembering season one.
I know. So we got to do a rewatch.
Yes, great.
I know, yeah, you've been watching.
Hey, listen, if you're listening to this, go to the show notes or put into your podcast application and search for Rings and Rituals and go listen to that podcast, because that's Marilyn and mm-hmm. her good friend, our good friend, Dr. Sarah Brown of Signum mm-hmm. University. And they do an analysis of season one of Rings of Power by looking at all the rituals that are depicted on screen. But then I think the cool thing that you do, Marilyn, is that you widen that out not only to the legendarium at large, mm-hmm. but then you actually start to talk about ritual in our daily lives and the power of ritual and how that shapes us. And I think that's one of the things that makes Tolkien such a rich body of literature, is because he brought his whole self into his work. And so we see ourselves so embedded into the words that he wrote down, even though we're in a very different place in a very different time.
Yes. It's remarkable how many things that I overlooked have been highlighted by doing this work and using words. Yes, indeed. And what it made me realize is one of the potentially excellent aspects of adaptation is you're looking at something through a new lens, through a new window.
Right.
And so when you see how this group or this person has interpreted something that you know and love very well, you're suddenly thinking about it in a different way. Mm-hmm. That may be positive, that may be negative, but you're thinking about it a different way. And so you can stand back and say, well, now why do I disagree with them? Oh, it's because this and this and this. Or, wow, I hadn't thought about this thing, but you know, I think they may be right about this. So,
right.
Yeah, for those of you who are wondering how you're possibly going to binge all of those at once, don't worry about it. We give synopses for every single episode. So,
and you know
what? Remind you right away.
I think Tolkien is something where if you asked J.R.R. Tolkien one question about his lore, he'd give you 10 answers.
Easily.
So it's okay to have interpretations of this stuff. And today we're going to be talking about an interpretation of this. And I think that's a great way to look at the Rings of Power, because the Rings of Power is not something that's canon, even though canon is kind of a funny thing in Tolkien. But it's not the books, right? We can just have fun with this. We can be like, hey, these are the cool set pieces that we're taking out of Tolkien's work. These are the themes. These are the cool visuals. And I think that that is going to be a great time. And season two is looking great. I'm stoked about this trailer. Why don't we go around and just give some hot takes? I am. I'm just... Ugh.
You and Mount Doom.
Marilyn, start us off. What's your hot take for the hot mountain of doom?
Well, in general, the trailer is on a higher level in terms of things are starting to stir.
Mm-hmm.
Action is taking place. We had a lot of scene setting and character introduction and so forth in the first season, which was lovely and needed. And now, Sauron is breaking out his moves. And we don't see as much yet about Numenor, but I think we're going to be seeing a fair bit. And Isildur is wandering around in the coasts of Pilarvir and that area and finding some interesting things. And they're bringing a lot more to bear. Turning up the volume, turning up the intensity, it seems.
Mm-hmm. David?
The thing that I'm most pleased by with this teaser is that they gave us a definitive date. And they play coy and futz around with, oh, coming in the summer or in the fall or whatever.
Q3, it was like 2024.
Yeah. I mean, but it was right there, boom, like right into the trailer, August 29th, definitive. When we have that kind of definitive commitment, it actually heightens our excitement. It gives us something to look forward to.
Of course.
If we had walked into Jackson's Lord of the Rings first movie unsure if they were going to green light the rest of the movies, it would have changed our experience of it. But when you walked out of that movie knowing that the next one was coming, mm-hmm. your excitement level is already at a greater level. And so walking into something like Dune Part 1, we didn't know, is there going to be a Part 2 or not? So when it was ended and you're just kind of like, it's a very frustrating experience. So I'm really glad that they were just very clear and unambiguous about that. So A, thumbs up. Thank you for, for doing that. And making our lives a little bit saner since we have so much to cover this summer anyway with House of the Dragon.
And we can actually plan ahead.
We can.
Amazing.
It's a 3-episode drop, I think, for the, the first
three.
Which is a bit extensive.
Holy cow.
That's a bit much. Anyway, beyond that, I thought this was a really good teaser. It certainly whetted our appetite for a lot of excitement, drama. It looks like we're going to get some great battles. We've got some monsters. We've got some eagles. We have no idea what's going on with the Harfoots, which is fine. But, you know, there's more because this is just the first of some more stuff that's coming out. Seems much darker, and so the dramatic stakes are higher, and that's great because this is a fraught period of time, right? If I understand correctly. And so we should feel uneasy and destabilized and the things changing around. And so the teaser did a very good job of that. So like the action junkie in me got excited because there's looks like some great fun there. But at the same time, what are these creepy crawlies? You know, what is... What's going on? Why is it dark? What's Sauron doing? It looks like, you know, we'll talk about each of the scenes, but there was enough question and enough unease and darkness that it gave me exactly what I wanted for this. I really want them to come out swinging hard and really trying to be confident. And hopefully they brought in some more people to help them with the production. Because I think we all had some reservations about last season. They kind of got lost in the middle bits.
They
I know
got
John.
Muddled. Yep.
Yeah, muddled. And that was really, you're a little crestfallen at the end of season one.
I think actually I turned around a little bit at the end of season one. Okay. I think at the end of season one, I was pretty hopeful. If you go back and listen to our wrap up, I think I was hopeful on it. And the reason is because they did get a little lost in the middle, I think, with their side plots. I think they just, their pacing was a little bit off. And I there were a couple of lore decisions I disagreed with, but I think I can get over it. But I think at the end, they were going into such an interesting direction with things like the Stranger and the Harfoots. And the way that they're telling this Numenor story is really interesting to me. So I am actually pretty excited to see season two. I'm very hopeful. Don't let me down, showrunners. Don't let me down.
The first thing as we were all waiting for the trailer to drop this morning, right after it dropped, you lit off like a candle and started putting together the Notion stuff. The next thing
you were
you were on fire, and I was like, "Man, I had a pretty crazy work day. I was on calls back to back all day, and so the next thing I turned around and it's like, wow, John went to town.
I took a screenshot of every single shot, and we're gonna break it down, and we're gonna make sure that you can follow along.
Having done a lot of this kind of work, John, I have to say your efficiency at this stuff astounds me. It would have taken me twice as long to do it as what you put together. So I have to say I'm really impressed, and I'm just really grateful that you are willing to pour yourself into this work, because when we get into the season proper, it's going to be same with House of the Dragon. For those who are interested, we have a House of the Dragon show guide that John built. It's and Aaron and Brian, of course, as well. So the three of you guys, the amount of work that goes into it is incredible, but it's just really a labor of passion.
Absolutely.
And we really hope that you guys can enjoy it, because it's so helpful to have this. I was watching House of the Dragon episode six and what were we doing? One and two,
five
three,
and
four,
six.
Five and six the other night. And I had our House of the Dragon show guide. I was like, oh wait, which dragon is that? And I could just go to the bestiary and I could scroll through the pictures of the dragons. I go, okay, that's the one. And that's the name. That's the writer. Like I had all the information I needed in my mind, and I didn't have to tear myself away from the screen, stop, do a bunch of Googling, get spoiled. But it was just right there on my phone, really quick and easy to get to. So I'm so grateful for it.
Just hold on to your elf pants, because
hold on to your mithril.
Hold on to your
mithril. Hold on to your mithril. Yes.
Hold on to Durin's beard, because
Durin's beard.
I'm working on the Rings of Power show guide too. I've got so far three views that you can do the characters in. Amazing. There's a race view where you could just see elf, yep, man, dwarf, and yep, Harfoot and whatever, yep, else. I have an elven faction view where I break down the Noldor into the House of Feanor, House of Finarfin, House of Fingolfin. I break down the Teleri into the Sindar, the Sylvan elves. There will be more to come. And there's also a Mannish faction view where you can see Numenorean, Southlander. If we see other men, I'll add those too. So there's going to be a whole slew of things. And I figured out how to hide different groups. So now, you go into the elven faction view, you won't see any men. It'll just be the elves, which is going to be really fun.
Well,
isn't
Norsen
cool? Anyway,
it is.
Listeners, you should write in and tell us your favorite story about how you've been using John's guides and David's guides.
Well, I think John is swiftly becoming the master.
That's what we should call it. One guide to rule them all.
There you go.
I just named it.
Perfect.
This is great. All right. We're having fun here. But I think it's time to talk about this trailer. I do want to say we are going to talk spoilers here. And what I mean by that, because this is a tricky thing, the show is pulling new things with plot lines, but it's largely based, if you don't know this, it's largely based on Tolkien's writings around the Second Age of Middle-earth. Mm-hmm. They are all pulled from the appendices of The Lord of the Rings. You can read the whole thing there. There's references to what happens within the story of The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. It's more fleshed out in extended writings like The Silmarillion and Unfinished Tales of Numenor and Middle-earth. However, they don't have the rights to these, so they are still based on the writings in The Lord of the Rings. But we're going to talk about the events in Tolkien's writing, so things that haven't happened in the show yet, because this is all about wild speculation. This is where we can have our dreams be pseudo-reality.
So can I it's all right if I share one thing that I did find as a sort of a spoilery thing?
Well, I don't want to talk production spoilers, so if you got a clue about something that's definitely going to happen, I want to say that. Okay. What I want to talk about is based on the images we're seeing, and based on our knowledge of Tolkien.
Okay. Okay. All
right. What do we think is in the shot?
Because I sat down and did a whole analysis like this for the behind the scenes trailer that came along, and
which is packed with a bunch of other information.
Oh my gosh!
As well.
Oh my gosh! I mean, it's yeah.
We only have time for one one podcast tonight, so.
Oh, right. Don't worry. I can move swiftly.
You'll move them in. Yep. Okay, let's get into it. Spoilers ahead. Leave if you do not dare to venture into spoilers. The Rings of Power teaser trailer begins with a picture of Halbrand slash Sauron looking upon the newly active Mount Doom from a distance. And then there's a close-up shot that looks like pretty much the same shot, but looking at his face. But Marilyn disagrees. This could be a different shot.
I also disagree.
Yeah, I think it's a different shot. The lighting is all different. Correct. He looks different too in terms of his facial hair and
okay.
He also his affect has changed. When he was looking at Mount Doom before, he was like licking his lips and saying, "Oh, thank you for getting this ready for me, and now I'm prepared to take it over." Mm. And in the second one, he's looking almost pensive, which is odd for Sauron, but. Mm. There you are.
And then we also have the quote of Durin the Fourth. I just want to read quickly. Mm. An evil, ancient, and powerful has returned.
Yep.
So,
but of course, we don't know what he's talking about. You know, if it's this or it could be, you know, the Balrog.
David?
The cloaked figure that is approaching the cliff, you know, area, the viewpoint here of what is most assuredly got to be Mount Doom. Hmm. Has like the cloak billows out and they're wearing some sort of headdress. And so it's really, the person seems very tall, and lanky. So whether that is, Sauron or not, I don't think it's the next shot that they're showing us.
Okay.
Where the person's or where Sauron's face is, it's much more like a firelight or a torchlight, mm-hmm. something that's much closer.
Yeah,
so you don't think that this is the end shot of last season? Because we did get a shot that was almost identical to this.
I think it's
from last season.
I don't remember the last shot.
Halbrand's face right after.
Yeah.
Okay. It zoomed in on him. So that was definitely him standing there in the end of the last season. But maybe it is a new shot this season.
And this person is very heavily cloaked. Like you can see the cloak flapping in the wind and it's quite a long, large cloak. So it's unique. It's distinct.
Classic Darth Vader cloak.
Very much so.
Yep.
But yep. You know what? What's funny is that the whatever the headgear that the figure is wearing, it really reminds me of the Nazgul and what from the Jackson movie.
Interesting.
Oh God, my brain is so fried. The main king of the Nazgul,
The Witch King.
The Witch King.
Angmar. That's right. It looks very much like his headgear. At least it reminds me of that. And I'm not saying that it is. I'm just saying I get those kinds of vibes. Like this person is wearing something that's very significant on their head.
I think it's the hood from the cape.
Yeah, me too. I do not think we can have the Witch King yet or any of the.
No. I'm not saying it is. I'm just saying the visual style.
I hear what you're saying. Giving me vibes. Yeah. I'm just going to finish my thought for anyone listening. The Nazgul will not appear until after the men who get the rings are corrupted, so they can't be around here.
And it's got to take at least, 500 years
or longer. Like that. Yep. I want to move on to the amorphous slimy goop that grows up from the ground. What is that?
This is where the new trend to have dark scenes so that you can't tell what's going on just really gets up my nose. Which is an interesting comment given something that happened on Space Babies.
I saw a theory online.
Oh, yes.
This is just a theory?
Okay. A theory. Right. This is like the spawn of Sauron. Like this is Sauron after he's been defeated in some form, like
reconstituting.
No, yeah. I don't think so.
Well, I'm thinking in a flashback. This could be because remember Ador says I killed him. So maybe this is the spirit of Sauron.
It could be a flashback.
Darkness sort of reconstituting. This is what happened after Ador killed Sauron.
Well, now I'm also thinking of the opening sequence of the, the Shivering Sands and then the black snaky slime that goes all through it. So maybe you've found a connection there.
Well, there's certainly a visual language happening with the sort of root snake-like things that come later in
Good point.
So they're definitely establishing, and all throughout this trailer, we get the camera shots of us moving forward at ground level as whatever is just before the camera is moving. And so the whole trailer or the whole teaser gives us this forward motion feeling, right? We're constantly moving in, we're pushing in, we're examining something. And so this definitely captures that, establishes that energy because that happens at this beginning. But yeah, what it is, no clue. This has got to be a Payne and McKay invention.
My best guess is it's a second age slime monster.
I was going to say Venom from the Spider-Man movies, the Sony Spider-Man.
That's pretty good.
You said about definitely evil creeping up from the depths.
So did we skip the little thing with Durin giving his speech?
Yeah, I mean, that I included the quote in the Halbrand thing, but yeah, right. I should have gotten a little shot of it.
He's sort of rallying troops here, right? He's giving a speech to convince people of something.
Yeah, and I do think that this is, the Balrog they're referring to. I don't think he's doing think Sauron so just yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
So I want to move on to Galadriel, Mighty Morphid Galadriel, we've been calling her, because you've got Morphid Clark doing an excellent job playing Galadriel. She says, prepare yourselves. And her and a band of elf warriors hold their swords up in the darkness.
This was not as bad as Legolas skateboarding down a flight of stairs.
It could hardly be worse.
But it was very much Avengers Assemble. As the camera pans around, each of them readies their weapon and does their little flourish. Mm-hmm. So this is very much, I think, targeted at the 13-year-old and all of us going like, oh, cool. Like, oh, yeah, it's amazing.
So
it worked on me.
It fair enough.
I liked it.
It was so short that it didn't make my eyes roll too far back up in my head, but it was the one sort of, I think it was the silliest part of it. But at the same time, I'm ready to see some ass kicking, some elves kicking some ass here. So,
yep.
Well, I'm just glad to see that she finally braided her hair, wrapped it around her head, as any sensible warrior would do.
You ain't pulling that.
Well, not without getting close enough to that being the last thing you ever do.
So I want to make clear cool here, like, the elves, the Noldor that we're looking at here, they are Caliquendi. They saw the light of the trees, and they are filled with that holy energy, and so they are smarter, faster, stronger than the elves that we see in the Third Age, the elves that, you know, you meet in Rivendell, mostly. But this is something that I'm really glad that they're showing on screen. Like, these are fierce warriors. These are really tough people.
That's a cool insight. That's good to know. And interesting, I'm noting too that there's, in terms of casting, there's a little bit more diversity going on in this as well. So I think they're widening out who they're going to have as actually playing these different characters, the different, choosing different actors, not going with a specific, you know, body type or hair or facial look.
Yeah.
I do miss the long haired elves, but that's a costuming choice.
I don't. They were just, well,
Elrond's rocking the shortcut though.
Nah, no. Give me Hugo Weaving's hairstyle.
Okay. Well, you've got Gil-galad's hairstyle. Instead,
that's true.
So you can be content
with
that.
Hope is never Mia.
And I noticed he even put his in a chunky braid at one point, but it's still hanging down his back.
All right. So, you know, we of course get Elrond joining the party during that same scene. I think his costuming is better this season. He looks, I think you point out, Marilyn, he looks a little older, less boyish.
He does. And of course, you know, that the first season we basically saw the diplomat and herald Elrond. Now we're looking at battle Elrond, and you know,
he was in the Teen Titans. Now he's in the Titans.
Basically.
All right, we've got an unknown character holding their hands out in front of them, palms up. The palms are covered in blood. This one puzzled me.
So these little fluttering things look to be moths to me.
See, I buy that. I liked when you said that.
Yeah. Mm. And so that gives us pause, because moths aren't inherently evil, but when we see the blood on the hands, which also gives us a very Christ-like illusion, right? Because her palms are bloodied there. Mm-hmm. It's a confusing set of visual images, and I don't think we're meant to know or understand what this is. The temple look, is it Numenorean? Is it Egyptian? Is it in the dry lands where we see the stranger
lady? Oh, I don't think
lady?
It's Egyptian.
No, but I'm saying it has
Egyptian influence.
I know, I'm just joking. Joking. Like, there's no Egyptians in this world.
I really think this is out east.
Yeah.
I think this is potentially something to do, you know, set up for stranger or encounters on their wanderings or so forth, thinking ahead to other scenes that we're going to talk about too. But
right, because it has that dry, dusty brown coloring to it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also, you know, any ritual with blood on the palms to me is not a good ritual to bring rainbows and unicorns. So
now, is she
and anybody doing that kind of ritual? The only place that we've really seen that kind of ritual so far is through the trio that I call the Hissy Sisters.
Right.
The Hissy Sisters.
Yeah, because every time they appear, the music goes, sigh-yah-yah.
I think it's easy to interpret the moths as being summoned by the person with the bloodied palms. Hmm. But then in the next scene, the moths are invading into the room. So if these shots are slightly out of sequence, then is the stranger, this feels stranger magic, these moths, the way that they're moving and flowing into the room. And so I don't wonder if the person with the bloodied palms is not summoning the moths, but is being surrounded by them as they come in. So,
Well, I thought of the moths as being something that they chose to turn into as a means of escape. Mm-hmm. Because it's a lot harder to take out an entire entity when they're all in pieces, right?
Right.
And
you mean the
Hissy
Sisters turned into moths?
Right.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
In order to get away.
Did that?
And now
I don't remember
looking
that.
At this, that's last season.
Yeah.
Now that I look at this, the sort of pot-bellied heater stoves on either side of the doorway in this next image also speak to me of a desert climb.
Right. And her armor and I'm assuming it's a woman, her armor and her, the greaves.
The wristlets.
Are they greaves or?
No, greaves, I think, go up to the elbow. This, I would call them wristlets or wristbands or something like that. But I'm not an expert in this. So listeners, write in.
Right.
Tell us what you saw.
And, yeah, and the dress and the fabric are definitely not Numenorean, don't feel as Numenorean as some other things.
No. I was thinking Khazad-dûm initially, but hearing what you said and, you know, just kind of letting it flow, I'm thinking more and more that this is some ritual that those Eastern. Who were worshiping Sauron, you know, out beyond the Sea of Rûn and so forth.
Got it. Rion.
And we do know from Tolkien's extended writings, I need a citation, I was trying to find one, but we do know that there's this idea that the Blue Wizards went out into Rûn.
Yes.
And they created magical cults. And so I think that's where we're going with some of this. But I think that the magical cults already exist. So I don't think the Strangers of Blue Wizard. I know, Marilyn. I know we're going to have a fight.
No fight. Just saying alternatives.
But
Blue Wizards
might have
gone out there to deal with the cults rather than starting them themselves.
Sure. I don't buy it. I think I think Gandalf's going to get out there and be like, "Oh, what's this? Why did you do this? This wasn't in our mission."
Well, and, we got a whole big single stranger scene. So
we can
definitely wrestle over it when we get there.
Why don't we go out to that? Well, you know, we did talk a little bit about, you know, the moths coming in the room. I think that was a really cool shot.
Mm. Yep. I think we're next on the forest floor.
Yeah, let's talk about the unknown voice, which it says, "And the rest of him slithers in. And you have roots rapidly growing across the forest floor. They look like snakes slithering."
Yeah, they really capture a snake-like vibe to it. This feels very elvish, this forest, with the lights that you can see. If you pause, you can see the design of the lights. They have that teardroppy type of shape.
I see what you mean. Interesting. I could make almost nothing out of this because of the darkness, so I'm really pleased that you highlighted one thing and added light to it so you could see there's actually a person standing there.
Yeah, so then these slithers are heading towards a person and their head is cut off in the shot. And we just see them standing in a dark green robe, and we see their hands and then just their neckline. So hard to say if it's a man or a woman, but there's definitely a figure there.
Well, Celebrimbor likes to wear dark velvet robes.
Okay.
Dark green velvet robes. And I do have a theory about who the voice is that's speaking, but I'm not going to share it because it's spoilery.
Oh, did it come from the spoilers?
It came from the spoilers.
But it feels very much like the Sauron infecting and spreading out his power, right? That's the vibe that we're getting from this.
Which is why I think this may be Mirkwood.
Oh.
Is that
still called the Greenwood?
Does that line up, though? Does that line up in timeline? Because Mirkwood didn't really exist until after the fall of Sauron in the Second Age, right? Not until the late Third Age when the old forest became Mirkwood.
Well, right? it was infected for a time, and then I thought Orodruin, not Orodruin, Legolas's father, Orodreth, grandfather, sorry, who did go to the battle with Sauron and at the close of the Second Age. So there were elves, Sylvan elves, living in the forest, and it started. Pretty sure it started to darken.
Okay.
And that was part of why they decided to march off. Listeners, write in, please. I don't have my resources at hand either. So I may be misremembering or confusing. But I mean, my first thought was, if he's trying to take over the world, I hope they try to hit Fangorn or Old Man Willow. they'll get it back with interest. And then I wondered if this might also produce some ants at some point. You know, they're
interesting.
Entwood and messing around with trees. They're going to hear from them sooner or later, I would think.
Yeah,
because we're definitely interpreting these slithering vine things as being evil.
I would say so.
Right, that's the whole point of a trailer and a teaser and these kinds of things is to sometimes sow misdirection.
Mm-hmm. Subvert our expectations.
Exactly.
Do you hear us, Benioff and Weiss? We're talking about you still. Yeah, I think it's fine, even if it doesn't line up with the timeline, which it sounds like it might, based on what you're saying, Marilyn. But even if it didn't line up with the timeline, like, they're already moving up the Balrog.
We've compressed this to
a very short period. The fall of Eregion, which is something we're going to talk about in a minute, doesn't happen until like centuries before the fall of Numenor.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is really rings, compressed.
Definitely.
So anyway, why don't we head into a quick break? And when we get back, we'll go further into the forest.
Into the woods.
And we're back. We've got an army of orcs marching through the forest with torches.
And they're not singing Into the Woods.
Definitely not.
Where are they heading? My guess is Eregion, where Celebrimbor is.
I have no idea, yeah, where this could be or what the battle is. The question is do they later on, when we see a sequence of a horse charge, a cavalry charge, is that the same battle? Is this the same group of orcs where we have Galadriel and Elrond and Avengers Assemble? So, you know, it's visually it's all the same dark forest, you know, land, but it's hard to know.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of forests and a lot of orcs in Middle Earth,
right? Isn't there like forests all over the place and moving
take
around?
Take your pick. This is before. Well, I don't know how long before the Numenoreans came and clear cut vast swaths of.
I saw the
Southern lands and made enemies of the Dunlendings for most of the rest of their history.
I saw a YouTube video once where the person who produced it had little tokens for all of the main sort of characters and then moved it, and it was and just sort of narrating all these moving around things, and it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I have no idea. And people have extracted all of this like detailed information out of all of the text. It's really incredible. The scholarship. The YouTube scholarship is pretty astounding.
It sounds like Matt from Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was exceptional.
So what I'm getting at with this Eregion stuff is, David, if you'll recall, when we did our Second Age podcast where we talked about this whole thing, after the Rings of Power were forged, Celebrimbor, the ruler of Eregion, is taken captive and killed by Sauron. The whole city of Ostinedol, the capital of Eregion, is burnt and destroyed, and there are just a few elvish refugees that go with Elrond to found Rivendell. But so I think that what we're doing is we're leading up to the finale, which will be the siege and destruction of Eregion.
Okay.
I think that would be a good place to leave it.
Sure, and that would be a build a natural arc for the season. Are we doing 8 episodes this year?
8 episodes, sounds like. Okay.
So that would be a natural arc, and then to end it at a kind of a cliffhanger-y point that would make a lot of sense from a TV production standpoint.
Yeah.
Well,
I think if you want to leave it on hope, because hope is never mere, you should have Elrond sort of lay the groundwork for Rivendell.
Right.
Like this would be a nice valley to settle, like right at the end. Right.
Yeah.
What I want to see before that is the doors of Khazad-dûm bursting open and Prince Durin leading an army of dwarves to the rescue of his friend Elrond. Because again, that's what happens in the actual text is that Sauron overruns Eregion. And even though Gil-galad and Elrond have come with armies to try and relieve it, they eventually are surrounded. And the dwarves come along and burst in on their rear and break up the armies enough so that Elrond and Elves can group together and escape, as John was saying, towards the mountains and build the refuge of
okay, that would be cool. That would all be great, fun stuff. Because at some level for the non-Tolkien, for the casual fan, right? The people who've seen the movies and enjoy the general lore, these little snippets really help to glue us and excite us into the things that we know. So it's a tricky thing to create the deep lore for the people who really close read the text, but it's and at the same time make it accessible enough for the casual fan.
And there's one line that I love so much in Unfinished Tales, where it talks about Galadriel making her way through Khazad-dûm on her way to the other side to Lorien. And she looks upon the dwarves with the eyes of a general.
Mm.
Now, I really hope that Payne and McKay, well, I'm sure they've read the sentence, but I would love to see them build on that.
Right.
And have some kind of interaction in which Galadriel is the one with Elrond, who is reaching out to the dwarves and saying, look, we're going to be toast.
Right. We got to.
We really need your intervention. And, you know, the king's saying, get out of my realm. And Prince Durin saying, look, we're going to do this. This is my friend.
Which could call back to the scene that we see of Durin at the beginning of this, where he's saying, you know, there's an evil arising. You know, this evil is awakening.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Very cool. That works.
Yeah. Is it too much for me to ask for a dwarf to yeet an orc with their hammer?
Like one time? No, it is not.
Just like hit them so hard they go flying.
And invented the game of golf at the same time.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry, that's been done already, or will be done.
Okay, So Celebrimbor looks towards a light source and shields his eyes with his hand. In the next shot, Celebrimbor looks at the light source and you see a silhouette of a person begin to appear. Who's that?
Gee, I wonder.
So this light source, again, we're talking about, you know, these visual styles and they played a lot with it in season one. To me, this light source and with the person standing there, it makes an eye. And that person creates the darkness for the pupil to be. And so it's just like, it's so Eye of Sauron to me. Mm-hmm. It's really,
yeah, like
and
that.
To do that subtle visual work, I really appreciate that kind of stuff. Again, it's for the casual fan, you'll pick up on something like that. You go, oh, isn't that looks like the eye. And, mm-hmm. you know, a very easy reference to throw in.
It's also a bit of a callback to Peter Jackson's envisioning of Galadriel and Gandalf and Elrond appearing in the old fortress of Dol Guldur.
Okay.
Right, and Sauron, this is when they first realize, okay, Sauron is back, and Gandalf is plastered against the wall, and we see the sort of continuous loop of the eye forming Sauron, forming the eye, forming Sauron, etc.
Yeah, and I do think that we need to bring in the next shot into this discussion, because that shows Halbrand, Sauron, as a new character, which I think it's almost indisputable that it's going to be called Annatar, that this is going to be the Lord of Gifts. And David, if you'll recall from our Second Age podcast, Sauron then changed his appearance to look like an elf, to look fair, and to be this like, hey, you know, I'm from the Valar, I'm super cool, I passed the vibe check, I'm coming in a ray of light. Look at that right here. I'm coming in a ray of light.
I'm
really cool.
Good pick.
And I'm going to be giving you the best gifts ever. There's going to be a lot of politicking this season, because one of Sauron's goals is to sow discord between the elves. And so make Celebrimbor start to doubt his relationship with Gil-galad. Am I being taken advantage of by Gil-galad, who's the High King of the Noldor? Yeah, who is he to have that title? I'm one of the sons of Feanor.
Well, and also...
grandson, don't at me.
Again, according to the texts, neither Gil-galad nor Galadriel ever trusted Annatar.
Mm.
And Celebrimbor didn't really either.
Well,
he tolerated him, but he didn't ever make any rings with Annatar, and he chose to deliberately avoid making the rings with Annatar, which is why the Elvish rings remain uncorrupted.
This is true. He also really wanted the knowledge that Annatar was promising, and I think it was a question of he was willing to gain that knowledge in despite of the warnings. Because again, in the text, it says that, you know, they couldn't read his mind, and this goes back to Asanwe. Because he was always closed.
And he closed off, right?
He closed off his thoughts.
Right.
And that presumably they told Celebrimbor that. It depends on which version you read. I mean, in one version, Celebrimbor is deeply in love with Galadriel and makes her the special gem and so on. So, you know, as John had mentioned earlier, Tolkien had, you know, 10 different answers to one question. But I think he was mostly Celebrimbor well, we hear in the first season, you know, I really want to make something that will excel my grandfather, and, you know, something of beauty, something of power, et cetera, et cetera.
So is this Numenor that he's...
No, that's a Regian.
This is a Regian. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's visually they're establishing this blue green light and sort of twilight space. So, okay. That makes sense. And these people are running around like there's chaos happening here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this could be the beginning of the end. Right. And you'll notice that blue and green are the colors that you see most often in Elvish warrior clothing.
Okay.
And maybe all clothing. I don't know.
I almost didn't recognize him here. They really did they slimmed up his face and his hair. He cleaned up nice.
This is a different actor.
This is a different actor?
This is not Charlie Vickers.
Are you sure?
Hand on heart, sure.
No. That can't be true.
Well, check it out.
I don't believe you. No, I don't accept that, Marilyn. Source me.
Okay.
I was thinking... it's Charlie Vickers because they're trying to show the audience this is the same person. This is Sauron, but his appearance is supposed to be different. And like, theoretically, he has a different face. And so the elves are deceived and not recognizing him as Halbrand. That was my theory. But if you're telling me this isn't Charlie Vickers, then I'm blown away.
This new actor is playing Sauron's original form, while Charlie Vickers will be playing the Halbrand. That's what it says.
Are they playing... because somebody else played Sauron in like the Dark Lord form, right? Is that what you're looking at? I'm looking at Charlie Vickers here.
I can feel like tell I'm being you that gaslit. It is not Charlie Vickers, and I can't say anymore without adding in spoilers.
Okay.
So. Well, all right. That's cool. That's some cool casting. If they're able to match these two,
yes.
Like you said, John, that Annatar is looking like Sal. Like if we have to do double takes and it's really two physically different actors, that's very cool. That is a very cool thing.
I'm looking at the dictionary definition of gaslighting. I feel like it's happening to me right now from Marilyn Arpukila.
She heard infects it live on your air. Mind, right?
She's Annataring me.
Exactly right. She's been here with us this whole time, John.
I am telling you the truth as I understand it to be. So
right.
I may be getting gaslighted by a whole bunch of other sources myself.
It's not like the internet has not been known to do that before, but I'm open to it. If they have a different actor, I think that's going to be very cool. I like that.
Fair enough. All right. So we get this wide shot with the release date, August 29th.
Yay.
Yep. This is the coast of Numenor, right? I think we can agree. Is that or Pelargir?
What's the mountain in the background there?
That would be Menal Tarma, if it's Numenor.
That it feels very like that to me.
Because Numenor's got that great mountain temple, right? Menal Tarma. Right.
Where you go to talk to the eagles.
You go to talk to the eagles, which we see an eagle soon, so we'll talk about that.
I can barely make out where the... Okay, this may be Hunting Markley's, but... Between the G and the U in August there, it looks like there's a bunch of people on the cliff.
I'm going to smack you down. All right, we're going to Elrond and Galadriel riding on horseback.
There are. There's something. There are people there. There's a stairway going up.
I see what you're saying. See what you're saying. I'm just joking around with
you. If you enlarge it so it's big on your screen, you can definitely see that there's some things going on.
Okay, John, I've just seen two different stories saying two contradictory things. So I think it's a question of...
Come on, Internet. Can't you be clear?
here's the thing.
Come on, Internet.
If you've seen leaks, Marilyn, I would say give them very little credibility because...
Wide berth.
Fair enough.
There's a lot of rumors. I'm still convinced until I hear definitively otherwise, that is Charlie Vickers to me.
Okay. I'm not putting any Internet points on it.
All right. No Internet points.
Fair enough. We get Elrond and Galadriel riding on horseback through a grassy field toward grassy hills, and then another close shot of Galadriel in the same scene. Where are they going?
Are we sure that that's Elrond? I mean, I'm not saying that it's not, but...
I thought it was Elrond as he rode past. I can't really see it in that picture I took, but in the shot, I think it's Elrond.
Okay.
I think so, too. I think so too.
Yeah, and there's that beautiful blue-green color again in her cloak.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm imagining that they're heading towards Khazad-dûm to warn the dwarves and ask for help against Sauron.
All right.
And I'm just a little worried about that look in Galadriel's eyes again with that close-up shot of her while she's riding.
How so?
What is it with Galadriel and riding? She has that fey look in her eyes.
Mm.
Remember from the first season where she's riding the white horse across the sands?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's that great line that I just read with Tea with Tolkien on Silmarillion Stories, if you missed it. But there's this great line that they used to describe Feanor. But even if he had known, it would not have deterred him. For he was fey, consumed by the flame of his own wrath.
Nice.
Yep.
That's Galadriel right there, channeling her uncle.
Right.
Well, I don't let you go that far. But
yeah, I don't think she ever got that bad.
She wouldn't even give him a hair. Come on.
Yep, that's true. Let's go to the next scene. We've got an unknown character with long hair and a white puffy garment sinking into the sea. I thought it looked like Muriel at first, but I see other theories in the notes here.
Well, I just wondered if it was Isildur's mother and there was some kind of a flashback going on.
I think you're right, actually.
We know she drowned, and it doesn't really look like Muriel to me. In fact, there was in the behind-the-scenes trailer, there was another shot of this same image, and she looked too pale.
I agree with that. Yeah, I'm changing my answer now. I'm copying you on the test, Marilyn.
You you are certainly welcome to do that.
Well, and they do something that a lot of trailers do, too, is put two scenes that have visual look similarities together back to back. So in the next scene, we get some sort of giant kraken, shark, octopus monster.
Actually, you know what I think that is? Mm. I think that is a sunken ship, and she is dangling from a rope.
Oh, no, that's definitely
trapped in the prow.
That's definitely some sort of Tolkienian kaiju.
Yeah, it's moving in the trailer.
It's moving.
Oh, it is?
Its arms come billowing up around her. Is
this the same thing that was attacking Galadriel's ship?
Right, wasn't there something I'm wondering if that's... I couldn't remember.
Which then, you know, they're like, Elendil, why are you saving her? Well, maybe that's why. He's like, I can't let somebody else be taken by the same monster.
Interesting.
So is there anything in Tolkien's writing about kraken and sea monsters and stuff?
The closest I can think of is the Watcher in the Water in Moria.
Yeah. I mean, they call it the worm, and that's kind of Tolkienian because Wurm is the German word for dragon. Ooh. And so if it's a sea dragon, then calling it a worm kind of fits in with that whole thing. But no, the only time we see the sea, particularly that I'm thinking of, is when people are, you know, crossing to Valinor.
Right.
Or crossing back. Until we get the Numenoreans, of course, and then they're sailing all over the place, except, of course, west. So maybe they were the one who discovered krakens and sea worms and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this thing definitely has eyes and teeth and a big mouth. And
I will take your word for it.
Wavy
arms. And by the time of the Third Age, when the Red Book is written, because remember, this is all in-universe text, most of the Numenorean knowledge is gone. Like, that washed away.
Huh. I see what you did there.
Fair enough.
All right, we've got Disa. We've got Disa in... I think you're right, Marilyn. That's her in the voiceover saying, every soul in Middle-earth is in peril.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have, just a shot of her looking over her shoulder, all worried.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing more Disa. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
Marilyn. Can you talk about here the part of the behind the scenes video where she's saying, you know, you ain't seen nothing yet, basically with the dwarf women.
Sure. Let's see, where are my notes?
When you're in costume on the set, you're going to discover even more wonderful things to do. Disa's actress promises that we only caught a glimpse of this in the first season, and that they're really going to let loose.
Yeah, and then we get a shot of Disa with two other dwarven women singing, I'm assuming, singing to the stone. And again, the actor says, this time you will see us in all our glory. So, I mean, I was already blown away by the one scene we did see of her singing to the stones. I can't imagine how they're going to up that game, but that's what they're
playing. Is that what the moths are doing? Do they control moths too?
No. All right. I don't think moths would do very well in.
Did you say so? Now hear me out. Didn't Gandalf whisper to a butterfly to get the eagles?
He did in the film.
I thought it was it a moth or a butterfly?
Maybe it was.
It was a Luna moth. It was something that was actually close to endangered species in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So they went through a lot of sweat to get that moth in there. in the original trilogy.
So that's where I was going back Jackson. With the moths in that previous scene. That's why I was thinking. I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we're limited to the books in this. You know, we can pull from the Peter Jackson nonsense.
Oh,
I mean,
my
this
gosh.
Whole series
pull from
pulls
it. They
from,
practically salted the first season. With it. I mean, I really want to see them branch out on their own more this time.
I agree with that. Really, and this is a more general sentiment I wanted to put out here in general is I don't need an explanation of this is how we got here in the Lord of the Rings and this is how we got here in the Lord of the Rings. I want them to tell me a compelling story from beginning to end about characters and stories and themes that feel their own.
Mm-hmm. Because they've made these characters their own. They've made these cultures their own. They've really presented them in their vision and their understanding. So own it, guys.
Yep.
Please.
And this is something that we've talked about in House of the Dragon, which is another prequel series. You know, we care about Rhaenyra and we care about these characters and we want to see what happens to them on an emotional level more than just a factual level. And so even though we might know their an eventual fate, they need to sell that to us. And that's the same thing in Rings of Power.
Definitely.
We've got old King Doran, King Doran IV. The third, I'm sorry, I have to correct this in the thing before I get added. looking up through a hole in the rock at a source of light as he shields his eyes. Is he trapped?
I have a feeling he's not going to make it out of here.
No. I think Prince Doran IV is becoming King Doran IV.
Yeah.
I was reminded of the hole that he looked through when he dropped the leaf down into the Balrog's very clean porch that got him so cross. And the light that he's shielding his eyes from could be Balrog flames.
It's weird that they had him say, "Fly, you fools," in that scene, you know?
He wasn't talking to the Balrog when he said that.
I know, I'm just joking around.
So am I.
The bridge in Khazad Dûm, it looks like Khazad Dûm to me, gets hit by a large projectile and a section collapses. Marilyn, this seemed to exhaust you.
Well, you know, if this is the Balrog making hay of Khazad Dûm, they're really messing up the timelines. And I can understand the temptation. You know, they already did the intro in the first season to say, "Hey, look, we can do a Balrog." So, all right, fine. I guess it was too much to expect that they would say, no, we're sticking to the timeline and we will not have a Balrog because we don't have a Balrog in this particular chunk.
Medium in the message, right? We've got to do stuff to get it on screen. So this definitely feels like the bridge. You shall not pass.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not certain that it is the bridge because
it gives the vibe. It has the vibes though. Again, going back to that
similar.
Thing.
Yeah. Similar architects, similar constructions, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think it's this. No, I know it's not the same one because that one was an arch.
Okay.
And this is clearly a.
Yeah. Good point. Very good point.
I'm here all night.
You couldn't resist.
No,
I couldn't resist.
He's very quick at Googling for these sound clips and loading them.
He's a master.
I pitched this on another podcast, but you gotta listen to Properly Howard's review of Pulp Fiction, where they discover that we had "You Make My Dreams Come True" loaded up, and they just riff on it for like 2 minutes, and it cracked me up. Cracked me up. All right, we get this unknown character fighting through a crowd. You know, upon reflection, I think this is a Elendil, and I think this is connected to the flashback that now it's all coming together for me. You know, if we get the flashback earlier. That Isildur's mother is dying and drowning. And maybe Elendil's like, "Let me at my wife. I need to go save her." And he can't get through.
Yeah. At first I thought Isildur and a crowd of Southrons that he's upset in Pelagir. But I like that story thread that you're weaving there, John. So.
Yeah, I'm definitely getting Elendil vibes for sure.
And then we have Galadriel, of course, screaming
what is this
in the darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we missed the orc. We missed the orc licking his knife, but whatever.
No, that's just next.
Right. No, are they? Oh, is it? You're
well,
right.
Well, it's next in my outline, so it's next now.
Yes.
let's talk about Galadriel here.
My bad. Yes, it's such a short scene that when I was jogging the shuttle on the YouTube video, it just
that's all right.
Yeah. Pick it up.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, I had to really try hard to pause at the right moments with this one.
Yeah, yeah, it's a tough one.
I'm now looking at that light, and for some reason, I'm thinking the memorial grove of trees.
Mm.
Is this the same thing where the Slytherings are happening?
That's an interesting question.
Mm.
That's a very
and is she having
question.
Sort of PTSD with Halbrand Sauron? You know, with the way yeah. that he left her in the water and the way he had her relive her brother's death and things like that. Is he still messing with her? Is he just like popping up every now and then to mess with her?
I mean, why wouldn't he? You know, he's a demiurge. He can do a lot of stuff. Was there any voiceover with this scene? Do you remember? I don't see one here. So I think there must not have been, but I just wanted to make sure about that.
And the clip that you grabbed of the screenshot is perfect because it's at the height of her emotional reaction to whatever is coming at her. This is a fear reaction, right? Mm-hmm. This is like,
I would say
this
so.
Is terror. This is not even fear. This is terror.
Yep.
This is a very like, oh my God.
Which is why Balrog is the first thought you might go to. Mm. But, there's other possibilities, I think.
Then, of course, we do a hard pivot in tone to an orc licking his knife. Very it's delicious.
Getting ready for the meats. Getting the meats ready.
It's back on the menu.
The orcs back on the menu.
The orcs are looking good.
Why do they know
here?
What a menu is?
Exactly. Well, you know, the Second Age was a more cultured time. So.
Exactly.
You know, Adar taught them about menus, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Great looking set, great looking orc. Yeah, really, really great visuals in this whole trailer. But this orc is just, it's so sharp and the makeup looks perfect. Yeah, it's very impressive.
It looks like he's in the ruin of a building that he just torched and ravaged.
Maybe, definitely.
Let's move on.
Yep.
Darkness will bind them. You know, you get this wide shot of, it looks like it's... I don't know. Where is this bridge? Maybe Numenor? This is leading up to like the Palantir Tower?
It looks like the bridge that led to Os Tirith, but I think it could be the beginnings of Barad-dûr.
Okay. And we get, of course, the call back to the famous poem, One Ring to Rule Them All.
But a nice ironic twist to that, darkness will bind them. Mm-hmm. I could read that as...
In the darkness bind.
The growing darkness... will bind together the peoples of Middle-earth.
Mm,
they will
good.
All come together to fight.
Right. To fight back the darkness.
Growing evil.
Right.
Right. Because this is the last alliance of men and elves. Like, this is
exactly.
when they fight together. More more so than even in the Third Age.
Definitely more so.
The hands of Galadriel, Gil-galad, and an unknown character, I'm doing that with tongue-in-cheek, we know who it is, hold the three elven rings together. It's Círdan, right? Can we just agree with that?
I hope so, but it could also be Celebrimbor before he gave it away to Círdan.
Oh, yeah.
So there are six rings in this.
Yeah, well, you know, Gil-galad. Hi, King. Got to show off.
He's,
one ring isn't enough.
He's got some serious drip.
He's got some bling.
Is that drip or is that bling?
For Christmas.
We would call that bling. I think the kids call it drip these days. I don't know.
Oh, is that the
they call
word?
It drip.
Okay.
He's the Rizzler.
The Rizzler.
He's got that skibbity.
Yeah.
You know?
But you know what? We do actually see a scene. I don't remember which teaser it was, but we do see a scene where he's not wearing his gold lame. Oh, right. He looks so much more like a leader that one might follow.
Right.
Yeah, he's got some growth to do.
There's nothing. There's nothing quite as bad as hearing boomers and Xers trying to use alpha and Zed slang, right? It just, and we had slang too. Boomers were the inventors of, well, no, slang goes even further back. So
no cap.
Are you a boomer, David?
Hmm?
You're not a boomer, are you?
No, I'm X. I'm X.
X, that's what I thought. I'm the boomer.
Yeah, world. That's what I mean. Okay. But yeah, you know, it's all these kids these days always thinking that they're the ones who invented the new slang. And we've had slang for a long time, y'all. So,
well, the whole thing about slang itself goes back to the medieval period, I believe, if not
to
earlier.
What?
To medieval times, if not earlier. So yes, the concept of slang itself has been around, but
so Círdan
the forms.
So Círdan,
yeah. So Círdan,
bringing us back on track.
Círdan, I think he was cast. I thought we had a production deal where he was cast.
Círdan, that's what I remember you saying last year.
He was confirmed very, very soon.
Yes.
After the end of the first season.
I thought it was even during the season.
He would put an appearance.
Yeah.
I don't know about casting, but the character is expected to appear.
Círdan, of course, means shipwright, and he's also just called Círdan the Shipwright. He is the guy building ships to go back to Valinor in the West.
And I hope he's also the guy who finally straightens out these people about their Hra and their Fea and the fears of fading and all that. And I'm very optimistic that this might be the case, because the very next image we see is of a restored tree of Lindon. Those leaves look lovely and golden and healthy to me.
I've been playing this little clip of the tree over and over again on my big screen. And on the tree, there are tendrils of golden light on some of the branches, sort of weaving and wrapping it around it. So that's interesting. But at the same time, what's also interesting is these leaves are popping out and they're going from green to gold. So as they're unfurling, they come out green and then they start to shift gold. So it's I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but you know, there's definitely I wonder with those snaky, slithery things too, what's going on. I'm not ready to put any internet points down on anything quite yet.
I have a theory.
Okay.
My theory is that this was Annatar's attempt at gaining the trust of
Ghirdan.
He came along and healed the tree,
demonstrate
his good powers of light and healing. And small wonder that he knew how to heal it, since it was Sauron that caused it.
Right.
This has long been my theory, and now I'm building onto it with this theory.
Okay. Because the leaves go from green to gold as soon as they come out. So if it's corrupted in some way, if it's not real, you know, or there's a, there it's tainted, whatever is coming into them, it's not green and healthy and yay, it's actually going, it's cycling faster into a death spiral.
Well, you know, Annatar Sauron could have just overdone the juice.
But, exactly. That. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think there's any, I don't think there's any prohibition to him using healing power and ability or whatever.
Sure,
I mean,
because
that's how he started off.
Mm-hmm. Especially now before he loses his fair form.
Forever.
Yeah. I think later he might have some limitations on that. Especially after he pours all his power into the One Ring. And now everything is focused on domination. Like he did give up some powers to empower another faction of his power, section of his power.
Subset.
There we go. All right. Let's go to Khazad-dûm again. King Doran holds a blue ring. He's got the dwarven ring. I was like, wow, we are going through this quickly. We are moving along.
Yeah, I heard that they're doing all the dwarven rings in this season.
I'm into that. They really should do all the men rings too at the same time.
It was seven, right? Seven for the dwarves.
Dwarf lords and their halls of stone.
Right. And I like this detail that the dwarves, because they have a different origin story in their nature, that it was harder for him to use the rings on them. They were more stubborn and resistant. And so then I look at this big blue rock that Durin's got here, and it's like, oh, they had to have some really chunky stuff there to really infuse the power to sort of work them over. But
yeah, so the dwarves never become wraiths, right? They become...
Oh, no.
They're not dominated by the ring.
They are to the extent that the rings will increase their...
their greed.
They called it gold sickness, but their greed. Yeah, their lust for gold and amassing greater and greater wealth. And that's the vibe that I'm reading from this image. And that also could be what contributes to the rift between
prince. What I mean is the ring will have a negative effect on them, but they're not going to be commanded by Sauron ever.
Oh, no.
That's never going to happen. And so they might, you know, they're not going to be Darth Doran. They're going to be like... you know, an inquisitor.
Bling, Doran.
Yeah.
Nobody dominates a dwarf.
I like it. Back to the elves, Arandir knocks his bow and points it at an unknown threat. A character stands behind him. I'm thinking it's a Isildur.
Looks like.
Feels like.
They're teaming up.
He's jumping over, as I look at this more, he's jumping over what looks to be like a little wagon, a little covered wagon cart or something. But he's definitely doing some serious elven parkour martial arts because he's spinning and flying through the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's almost as if the way that they cut the scene, there's a bit missing out of this in between that and when we see. There's definitely, these are two different, this is one scene, but they've actually, there's a time slice missing out of this. Because when he knocks his arrow before he lands, the background changes, the people who are standing there, their positioning changes. So
Trixie teaser makers.
They just don't want to tell us what he's shooting at. We do see, of course, a wide shot of the palace on Numenor with an eagle flying toward the palace. I don't think I actually got the trajectory of the eagle in this screenshot, but it is there.
Oh, there it is.
Rewatch it.
There it is. Yep. I think I see it.
It's very slight movement, but it's flying in straight over. Mm-hmm. Yep.
This
it just
is
shoots
just
past.
Really confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because let's talk about all these three shots together.
All three together. Thank
you. These, you know, we see the eagle perch in the window and then Farazone is in front of it.
With a sword drawn. I mean, what?
Is he defending himself from the crowd that's coming towards him? Or is he about to rally the troops and, you know, sort of for freedom kind of thing?
He's the first question is, did he ride in on it? Which I don't think so.
I don't think
after
so.
After reviewing it, I think he comes up to it. So,
well, that relieves me greatly because I was really having to work to make that make sense.
Yeah, I don't think so. Because you can't see him on the back of it, and then you can't see him in front of it right away. He then stands in front of it after. So what I think is, Eagle comes and is like, Manwë is watching. Get your shit together. Let's figure this out. And then Farazone's like, you see the domination of the Valar, how they try to enforce their will upon us. They send their birds. They want to come see us in person. They send a stupid bird to talk to us. And so that's why he's raising his sword. He's like, for Numenor, not for the Valar. And then, you know, I think that he's going to be, you know, rebutting the arguments of the Eagle. And he'll be prosecuting the case against Manwë that I've been making on Silmarillion stories this whole time.
So I have a question for you. Do we think that Halbrand has come back and is now the power behind Al Farazon's increasingly mad schemes?
It's a good question. Because in the books, you know, of course, we have Sauron coming as Sauron, right? Saying just like, I'm not so bad of a guy. You don't know me that well. You know, maybe I was with Morgoth for a time, but I'm a changed guy, you know. I'm a Maia. I'm one of the holy ones. We're gonna do great things together. You know, we can rule the galaxy together as father and son. in here, I think that because you had the whole interaction with Galadriel and she's telling them about the story of Sauron, I don't think they can do the same thing. So a great way to sidestep that is Halbrand was vouched for by Galadriel,
right?
And they don't find out that he's Sauron because they've already gone back to Numenor. So Halbrand then goes back to Numenor as Halbrand and is like, you know, I know a lot about what you're trying to do here. Let me talk to you. You know, he's just kind of whispering in Farazone's ear and trying to get him to raise up these Kingsmen.
Yeah, which one of the big questions I had for the second season is Galadriel going to warn the Sothrans and war Numenor, etc.
Well, it's hard to do that in Numenor, right? That's the whole problem, is they're so disconnected from Middle Earth.
Except for Elendil.
But Elendil's stuck in Numenor right now.
Right. But we do see a lot of scenes of Elendil on the coasts.
Mm-hmm.
Now that could be, of course, the western coast of Numenor. So I don't know. I mean, you can make up all kinds of things, can't you?
Right.
But if she doesn't let them know soon, and from the way we heard her voiceovers saying he's been here all along in a very panicky kind of voice, I tend to think that that's not the first thing she does in episode one, is to send out bulletins. Mm-hmm. She could figure out a way to send a warning, if you know, but I think that the shame and the perhaps distraction from something or other happening. And maybe Anatar is distracting her too. Who knows? But I'm having a hard time. I don't really know what her base is going to be, right? Is she going to hang out in Oregon for a while? Is she going
to
go off in the forest? At some point, there's a scene of her standing and really crying hard. Yeah. And I looked at that and I thought, oh, thank goodness she's finally starting to do some healing here.
It's going to be like, Galadriel, do you want a hot chocolate? Like, she's going to lose it. She's going to lose it.
But it's got to happen, or it does. I mean, I think her face looks different. Now, maybe that's just my mind kind of interpreting things the way I, cognitive bias kind of stuff. But that's a really interesting question for me, and I'm wondering how they're going to answer it.
So, speaking of crying people, we've got Theo in the next shot, just looking out into the darkness and crying. The absence of Bronwyn combined with this shot really makes me think that things aren't going well for her this season.
Yes. Well, if you look at the behind the scenes trailer, you see Orondir letting a funeral pyre.
That's
and
rough.
The actor, Cordovas, who plays Orondir, says the darkness did reach him. He's received the biggest blow to his spirit thus far. I think that Bronwyn dies sometime early in season two.
Yep.
Which grieves me deeply because she was one of my favorite characters. And maybe not, but I don't know. I'm not sure how else to interpret that.
The biggest fan of that plot line. I thought that it dragged at times, but certainly sad. You don't want to see a kid lose his mother.
No, and I think that could be another piece that will set him on the path of becoming one of the nine.
Do you think he'll be...
Interesting.
I've seen a theory that he'll become the king... The King of the Oathbreakers.
King of the Oathbreakers. That's also quite possible because there is a potential for him to hook up with Isildur for a time.
Mm-hmm.
His strength to the Southlands, when Galadriel and Halbrand were leaving it in episode 8, Bronwyn shouts strength to the king, but Theo shouts strength to the Southlands.
Mm.
So I don't know if there's any particular weight to the different choices of words there.
Right. But, speaking of characters looking off into the distance, we've got an unknown character, might be Isildur, might be a new character, looking up into the darkness. Is this Isildur? The more I look at it, the more I think it is.
That was my reading of it.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay. Then we have molten projectiles flying toward what appears to be Ostenedal, the capital of Eregion.
Hopefully we'll get a good battle.
I really hope that the season finale is fantastic. Yeah. Then again, we thought that like the start of Mount Doom would be the finale, and that was episode 8, I think, in season 1 out of 10.
Is that right? Seven.
Or 6 out of 8, whatever it was a couple episodes before.
It was 6 out of 8.
Mm-hmm.
6 out of 8. Because you have Udun,
us.
The Eye, and Aloyd.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing a podcast about that recently.
I know.
That's how I know the names. I even know the names of the chapter.
So Adar's evil twin leads an army of orcs. A masked character stands behind him.
I don't know.
First of all, how are we feeling about the look of new Adar?
He seems fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're doing wonders with hair and makeup and stuff.
I almost forgot that it wasn't Joseph Maul for a minute.
Mm-hmm. And there's another scene of him, and I thought, oh, there's Adar, and I thought, wait a minute, he wasn't supposed to, and then I said, oh, wow, look at that. They really did some good work there.
Yeah. Is there a conflict between him and Sauron coming?
Oh, yeah.
Hello, come on.
Huge.
He already claimed to kill him once. If he comes back again, I don't think he's going to say, oh, dear, I'm so sorry. I was having a bad hair day.
Yeah, that was the other Adar.
Mordor so that I created you for you. And
you can't hold a grudge against me. That was Joseph Maul.
Yes.
Then we get the stranger. He's back. He's in Rune, it looks like.
Yes.
And
I would say so.
He is slamming his staff into the ground and looks like creating a windstorm that's leaving the Wicked Witch of the East holding on for dear life.
No, that's Nori.
I think you're probably right. That's a good call, because she's got the big skirts.
Yeah, it looks like her clothing.
Okay. There's some little flag-like projection above the well, which is an interesting looking well too, because it's got that big lid bell thing on it.
It serves as a well and a bell, you know. Yeah. Two for one. There's only so many stones in there, so you've got to be efficient in your building.
Blue Wizard, Gandalf. What do we? Let's go. Ding, ding, ding. Round one.
I'm in Team Gandalf.
Yeah. Oh, now, didn't, is, wasn't there some fragment where Gandalf had come and then went and then came again?
Yeah, there is one text that implies that Gandalf was here in the Second Age.
Mm-hmm. Would they have access to that? Would they be able to use that?
They have the case by case agreement.
Okay,
yeah. Right. So they could maybe pull that in. Also, it's just like, I think they're kind of just playing jazz a little bit sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I won't say they fooled me about Sauron, because there were a couple of times, by episode four, there were a couple of times when I said, oh gosh, I really hope that that's not what they're going to do. And they did. So I was hoping, all right, well, maybe this will be a double trick fake up. And they're throwing all these Gandalf things in here. And we're saying, oh, Gandalf, Gandalf. And then, ha ha, no, my name is Alatar and I am a blue wizard.
Yeah, it wasn't my favorite line to hear. But that's just because that's what I want to have. I am good. But you know what?
Yeah,
it's fine. It's fine. We're moving on.
But
I don't know. That was when I stood up and fist pumped and cheered. So
okay. I do like that we're going to a different landscape. We're moving away from the lush forests and coastlines, and
we're on Arrakis.
Yes,
or is it Tatooine?
Good. Yeah, more Tatooine than Arrakis here. No big worms.
Right. Maybe we don't know.
And I just I thought was Moses striking the ground with his staff and building
that.
A new well.
That's a good one.
Yep, that's a good one, and that is, you know, arguably why he didn't go to the Promised Land in some interpretations.
Because he struck the ground with his staff?
Because he did something and said, I give you water, instead of God gives you water.
Oh, no, that was a big mistake with Yahweh.
That was a whole thing.
Yeah.
All right, so Mighty Morphid Galadriel is back. She's the coolest. She's shooting fire arrows at orcs and causing explosions.
That's a double arrow knock, too.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
I'm loving it.
Well, don't you always do double arrow knocks? I mean, come on.
I'm not as badass as Galadriel, so.
Yeah, I never did double knocks either. I did actually study archery for a semester in high school, so I have. There are times when I look at the things that they're doing, I say, "Oh, your wrist is going to really hurt when that's over."
I think this is
won't, because there aren't any actual bowstrings going on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Then
I think
got...
this is a mixed scene here. I don't think her arrows hitting is the same, but that's just typical trailer stuff.
Haven't you ever played a video game, David? Have some hope. You know, you see the barrel of oil there. You shoot it with your fire arrow. It goes boom. Come on, have some fun.
Well, we've got our friend. What's his name here?
Elrond.
God, my brain is fried. With his. Pretty cool looking new helmet. Are we in for this helmet design?
I'm pretty good with this.
I like this a lot. Yeah.
When's he going to shave his head like a Hatamoto?
That's with the ponytail. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think he's haughty enough without having to imitate anybody else.
And then we got a big cavalry charge.
Yeah, the cavalry charge. My question is, who is this?
Mm.
My best guess is Proto Rohirrim because of the armor.
That's where I am.
It looks very much like Elrond in the lead here.
Well, could be.
And they definitely set up the shot. Well, you know what it is? Because the lighting of the trees in the Elrond shot is the same. And there's a flash of a little blue flag behind him. And then when you see the charge, there's blue flags. Banners of the same color. So it feels very much of a piece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know why. Do we hear much about elvish cavalry? I'm just trying to
Not
think.
Really. Not that I know.
Unless he's leading another, if they're not elvish. Yeah. But he could just be leading a unit.
He is half man.
That is true.
Yeah. But.
And these trees are, while the grass is green, these trees are dead.
Are they, or is it just misty and they're
getting
blurred?
No, they're dead.
They're dead?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
those evil roots or the black slime, one or the other.
But is that Mr. Smoke? Like, is that smoke coming up from burned trees?
Probably smoke from burned trees, yeah. Which is why, again, yeah. I really would love them to take this opportunity to show us some Ents the way they did briefly when the comet was landing in the first season.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I forgot about that.
I hope they just didn't do that once, you know, as fan service and then never again.
All right. We are already running long, so let's keep going. Who is the next character? Is that a dwarf? It's beardless, but who knows?
I think that's, what's his name?
Celebrimbor?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that was my
thought,
too.
You don't?
Didn't look like it to me.
Okay.
Under extreme stress, unless we're seeing the Círdan for the first time.
Yeah.
Silence.
That could be.
I guess.
Yeah, no, I was staring at the thing, trying to think. And I'm okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I can't, I was trying to count the rings, but it's hard to freeze frame that because it's such a fast.
You're right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. At least 7 rings there. 8, 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Could be up to 9 rings there.
And to answer your question, David, they did make a lot more rings that there were considered
essays
in the craft.
Yeah,
they started
rings.
Off small. And
yeah, I remember John
technique
saying that when we were doing the Second Age podcast that there was more than one.
Yeah, so that's why when Bilbo picks up the ring, Gandalf's like, "Huh, there are a lot of magic rings.
Mm-hmm.
Could
and
be a problem.
To
could
be
not be.
Used.
Maybe probably not a problem." And then,
but my heart tells me.
Yeah, eventually he's like, "Oh, we are totally screwed."
Actually, I could see this being Celebrimbor trying desperately to destroy any rings because Sauron's armies are advancing.
Mm.
So the next scene with the guards here,
I think we could talk about this whole chunk together, basically, because this is the guards into the explosion and the reveal.
So in the first part of the guards being guardy,
surrounding Annatar, Sauron, whoever they're going to call him.
In the background, it's Celebrimbor, and he's looking bloodied and rough, as is the figure who's dropping the rings into the fire.
Ah, good catch.
And he's wearing a similar outfit. It's not exactly the same. It's hard to tell because that is the dress. What was that stupid dress that everybody lost their minds over?
The green robe?
Yeah. Remember there was
the bathrobe?
Well, there was some dress that there was an internet thing where nobody could tell what the color was, and it was a few years ago.
I think he's a green guy. Green seems to be his go-to.
Anyway, I'm pretty sure that that's him putting the rings in the fire. And then this looks like the burnt out ruins of his workshop.
Hmm.
Yeah, could be. And then, of course, we get this explosion with water and air pushing everything out. Then what are we looking at there? Is that Barad-dûr? Is that something else?
Well, let's admit that, you know, they could be messing with us and putting something completely unrelated in.
Yeah, I'm adding a question mark to that description.
It freezes as the water vapors expand out. So it starts off not frozen. And then there's just sort of grass and trees, kind of, you know, mountainous, subalpine. And then it freezes as it, the ice definitely forms.
Yeah, and that castle really reminded me of the castle in the north where we first see Galadriel and her small band of warriors.
Yeah. Is this a flashback?
Galadriel and her merry men?
Something like that.
Ooh, maybe.
And I'm trying to decide.
Maybe that's because we get that whole thing earlier where it might be Sauron's death. And then the group comes out.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. Hmm.
Okay.
And then, so maybe this whole hand twist is not anything to do with this explosion.
No, I think those are two separate things for sure.
Okay.
I think so.
So cool detail, missable detail here. As the rings of power font objects spin in and we pull back from this explosion, there is frost on the letters.
Ooh.
And as they settle back down, the frost melts away
and
then it gets hot. Then we get a sort of a warm flame underneath it. So we've got a little song of ice and fire going on here.
Oh, my God. Get out of your hot tea brain. We're talking about
We're mixing
Lord
our stew.
Of the Rings.
We got Dune going on. We got some Star Wars going on.
No mixing of flames.
Well, it is kind of an interesting balance because the first stronghold of Sauron was the ice castle, and now he's got the volcano neighborhood. So he's gone from ice to fire. And I'm not a GOT stan, so don't worry. or an HD fan.
All right. We are running long on time here. And wait. My wife tells me.
That's normal.
My wife tells me that she needs help with something. So we're going to do quick feedback, and then we're going to do our outro. Let's do quick feedback. We've got Drunk Gil saying, but you can quote this if you don't get enough replies, which we didn't. The visual effects work for the landscapes and wide shots is stunning. However, a few elements look too Hollywood / Marvel universe, such as the tree roots and the sludge monster. Still, I can't wait for season two.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Heard.
Yep. I hear you. And you know, visual effects might not be finalized in a teaser.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's a good point.
Then Layla says, hi. Hi, Layla. It's been a while. Thanks. I was very nervous. What'd you say, Dave?
I was just saying thanks, Layla, for
the email. Sorry.
What did you say?
All right.
He's going to town.
He's gone mad.
He's absolutely
Layla says,
going to town.
Hi. I was very nervous for this trailer. After seeing it, I'm back on the T-Rop train. Awesome trailer, Ooh. Especially in line to the effect of Sauron was here the whole time. And long-haired Halbrand / Annatar made me so happy / relieved / hopeful that they're going to fix the holes in the Aurigion plot. And my man Farazone on an eagle. Let's go. Can't wait to listen to your coverage, Layla.
Awesome.
Fun. Yeah.
All right.
Well, it's been a lovely time breaking down this trailer with you all. The team's
I'm
back
so
together.
Glad.
The gang's back together.
I missed you guys.
Yeah, and you shall be called the Fellowship of the Ring. Dramatic music.
Ba-da-dum, 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 ba-da-dum. Come on, you didn't pull that piece too?
All right. Supercast and Patreon are great ways to support us. You can get ad-free and early podcasts for as little as $3 a month. You can get our show guides. You can get more Notion goodness, like the one that you got a sample of this time by seeing our trailer breakdown. You get a show guide. You get show trackers, which David puts together. You can see when things are coming, like Rings of Power, newly announced.
I just updated the show tracker.
Yep, very exciting. And you get exclusive episodes like Second Breakfast and more Tolkien content like Shireside Chats, where I talk about the letters of J.R.R. Tolkien one by one. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got a fun Discord community. You can join us there, talk about the trailer, talk about anything Tolkien, talk about anything else you want. We've got our affiliates. David, hit me with the affiliates.
Well, Radioactive Ramblings has been busy. They were covering Invincible, and they're going to be picking up the boys after they finished their Fallout coverage. And then it seems like Aaron has picked up a new co-host, and they're doing deep Fallout lore. They're actually going back into the origins of the world and breaking it down, doing a very Second Agey style podcast. So very cool. But yeah, they're going to be doing a full episode to episode coverage of The Boys when it comes out, which we are very grateful that they're going to do that. So
nice.
Go check them out. Rings and Rituals, Marilyn. You just, where are you now? Episode 5, episode 6, chapter 5,
well,
chapter 6?
Well, the next episode is dropping tomorrow, I believe. Is that
Excellent.
Correct, John?
Yep.
And in terms of recording, we've gone up through episode 6.
Okay.
So we still have to do the Eye and Alloyed. But episode 6 won't appear until 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Right.
All right. So you got plenty more coming.
Yeah. And so go start to because you guys do episode to episode of season 1.
Yes,
we do. So this is a perfect time to start catching up on your season 1 rewatch.
Yes, it is.
And your and a companion podcast.
Synopsis and every episode.
Right, with Rings and Rituals. We'll Shift Dust. Alicia is covering Beacon 23 season 2. And then we've got Properly Howard movie review. They took a little break on their Felonies and Fugazis, and Steve and Anthony had their own discussion of the Dune 2 movie. Steve,
I learned that when it came out, and I had been advertising it as a re-release. So now I have to retract my statement. You know, it's a whole
what did you say?
Sentiment. It's just, it's not good.
Anyway, Felonies and Fugazis is their current season, and they just did Pulp Fiction, and I believe Gross Point Blank is going to be their next one. So good season. And then we're going to do Severance with them once we get a date for that. So we're going to do a joint coverage.
I'm not saying a word about Severance when I do the outro until I get a release date.
Right.
But I do want to plug, because we haven't updated our show notes yet, Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast.
Oh, by Alicia. Yeah.
That is going strong. She's doing the Old Republic. She's just doing an episode on the Knights of the Old Republic games this week. So definitely check that out too.
It's terrific.
All right.
Very cool.
On the Lorehounds, we've got Hot D, House of the Dragon. We've got a weekly coverage of two episodes at a time from season one ahead of season two, where we'll be doing episode by episode coverage, full breakdowns. Alicia and I are going to be covering The Acolyte, which is a new Star Wars show set in the end of the High Republic. Alicia and I are also killing ourselves by covering Doctor Who weekly. But we're doing short episodes on it. It's not like, you know, super long discussions, because it's a silly show and we love it. Alicia and I are also talking about X-Men 97 this week. So
you got through three episodes very quickly.
I know. And I also got roped into the MCU one more time for X-Men 97.
I was surprised that you said you were going to.
I
absolutely
too.
Loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I hope people will tune in.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people have been talking good stuff about that season. So.
Okay, lastly, coming this week, I just want to plug the Star Wars Film Festival, A New Hope. It's finally back, folks. We're talking A New Hope. We're talking episode 4, 1977, all your favorite moments with Han, Luke, Leia, and accidental incest. So.
Almost.
Right. So anyway, I want to give our big shout outs here. David, our Discord servers.
Yes. Opus the Machine actually told me that he'd stopped supporting the server, and so he was enjoying
thanking me.
His name, but yeah, we can stop thanking him because he's not been on Discord
That's
much
pretty
recently.
Funny.
So fair enough. But Gnarls, Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, and Doof71, thank you for supporting the community by allowing us to have a more nifty, neato server. If you would like to boost the server, if you do Discord Nitro, go ahead, give us a boost. We would love to have the support, because it's not for us, it's for our community. So, Lore Masters, top tier subscribers on Patreon and Supercast, Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Doof71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andra B, Kwong Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V21, Mothership 61, Gnarls again, and forever last but never least, Adrian. Thank you all so very much for your ongoing support. We couldn't do it without you. It makes a big difference to have the financial backing of all of our subscribers, no matter the tier, because we do this out of love, enjoyment, passion. It's not a day job for us. So every dollar that you guys are able to provide us helps us keep all of the systems in place and make sure that our co-creators and co-hosts all get to partake in, you know, some of the financial resources that we generate from this. So if you would like to support us and support the community, please do so. We would greatly appreciate it.
As Gil Gallad would say, Patreon subscriptions are never meager.
And on that note,
good night, everyone.
Good night.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
These days, I can do anything from my phone. Book a vacation, order a meal from a 5-star restaurant, buy and trade stocks. But maybe the most amazing thing I can do is make my dirty laundry disappear. and then reappear perfectly washed and folded. I have Rinse to thank for that. I just schedule a pickup in the Rinse app or at rinse.com. A Rinse valet comes to get my clothes, and before I know it, they're back, crisply folded and ready to wear. They even do dry cleaning, which is returned hanging in a nice Rinse garment bag. And with Rinse, my satisfaction is guaranteed. If for any reason I'm not happy, they'll re-clean my clothes for free. Best of all, Rinse saves me tons of time each week. That's time I get to do something I love versus something I have to do. So if you want to save loads of time by not doing loads of laundry, remember, there's an app for that. Rinse. Sign up now and get $20 off your first order at rinse.com. That's R-I-N-S-E.com.